And we are still talking. Okay, so we're gonna continue on. Sometimes, Roy, what we do is we continue recording when everybody's not done, and that's pretty obvious that that's the case today. And then we just posted into our weekend newsletter so that there are about almost 2,100 on that newsletter now so that they can listen to it. It doesn't air on the radio station, but we go ahead and continue our conversation. And Clayton had a question that he wanted to ask.
Yeah, Roy, appreciate you sticking around. I wanted to ask you one question earlier, but... you know, you've been around the board, obviously, for a long time, and I remember back in those days, I remember when Les Rosenthal would make a move to try to corner the wheat market, and he'd, like, immediately get slapped, you know, out of the play, no, you can't be on deal, fine, and everything. Now, all of a sudden, you got the funds that have been, you know, encouraged to do what they're doing by the board. And collectively, the indemnity of the funds are along, what, something like five times the carryover. I mean, in your thought, without her, you just do nothing. I mean, that's the obvious question. If they just do nothing and they own the corn crop, what the heck happens?
Well, they can't own the corn crop. I mean, the CFTC and the Board of Trade, neither one will allow that to happen. You have to realize that the Board of Trade has gone for public now, and they have stock out there, and they really do like the volume. We've traded 5.5 million contracts at the Board of Trade, a daily volume, over the last 2 weeks. They like that.
Sure.
It's good money. And
but, you know, where do they draw the line? Where do they step in and, you know, say time out, something's got to change? That's a million-dollar question, I guess.
Well, I guess that it comes down to the participants taking themselves out of the picture. Right now, you mentioned wheat. The index funds along 200,000 contracts a week. That's so much bigger than the soft red wheat crop in Chicago. Now, they're only long about 29 in Kansas City, which is a much bigger crop. But I guess that you're dealing with a lot of people that aren't as sophisticated. Now, they're very sophisticated, but they're not as knowledgeable about our commodity markets as what they think they are. And to them, wheat is wheat. And, of course, we know that's not true. But I still think that this ownership of a commodity in the deferred months at much higher levels in a full carry market will create a distaste in some people's mouth eventually. And you'll see some of this go away.
But if they restrict people from being in there and say there's only so many bushels of corn and only so many people can own it, that's more bullish to me, because those bushels are going to be a real competition to get them if we push people out of this market so you can only have a crop certain amount of players.
I really don't think that happens. Chuck, your comments about using options, I think, are very apropos. Corn options are trading about 32% volatility. They could get worse. But bean and wheat options have been relatively inexpensive. Wheat has rallied a little bit here over the last 2 weeks, but beans are still trading about 22% volatility. If you want to have a short position for people, buy a put.
Yeah, it's really cheap, and guys forget, again, the value of where these beans are. There's nothing wrong with having a floor and you get 720. What's the matter with that?
I did some arithmetic earlier this week. We were looking at the cost of crop insurance for a grip policy in Champaign County being not much less than or about the same cost as a 370 put was at that time. Now, the board's gone up, so that 370 put value's gone down, and it's going to cost you less than what your insurance policy does. But that's what you were guaranteeing yourself, was about a 370 futures with the DEIS board at $4 average. And again, it's gone up a little more, so you're going to be about a 405 average for the month, I think. But this is a...
Well, as a producer, I look at it, I'll take the insurance and have the put. I mean, I've still got plenty of money left over. I mean, again, everybody's different, but that's I'm not going to abandon crop insurance for puts.
Right.
But again,
you get so much more for crop insurance.
The cost is so minute for both that I just look at taking both.
For instance, if you do the math, say you decide to go 85%, and the spring price is $4.10. And then we switch 10 million acres and we have a good crop, and say corn's $3 this fall, your guaranteed bushels per acre is about 200 bushel an acre if your APH was 160, 165, because I've done the numbers. To me, you can really use this crop insurance as a great tool. And I'm like, Chuck, I'm not going to I'm going to buy the crop insurance, and I'm going to buy some puts, and I'm going to leave the upside open on my cash sale. And I think that there could potentially be, you could make a heck of a lot of money this year, as long, but you got to play your cards right. I think the worst thing you can do is nothing. But, when we look at this corn market, with what you said, Roy, I feel like an 8.2 switch. I've been thinking lately that maybe it could be a lot more. What you said made perfect sense. If we do end up going 8.2, and like you said, the last 2 days we broke out of this range, how do you feel about if you were recommending to somebody on fall sales? Clayton and I were talking about maybe a quarter to a third. I want to have my guys covered before the March report, at least on a good percentage of their bushels.
I've actually had to slow down the farmer guys. The farmer's been very willing to sell into this rally.
Right.
From 350 up in new crop corn, the word I kept hearing was, there's so much money involved here, I got to sell something.
Mm-hmm.
We've done a really good job, I think, as an industry in handling the farmer selling, because we've kept our basis levels relatively strong. They're starting to back off a little bit now. But I've got little country elevators that have a record to arrive on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about North Carolina. People are telling them, I'm not going to grow any cotton this year. I'm going to grow corn.
Mm-hmm.
Pro Farmer today jokes about a implement dealer selling the first planter ever in Maine. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of the silliness that's going on. So I think we're going to get our corn acres. I think we don't have to worry about that anymore. Now we have to worry about growing them.
And even if the crop, let's say, Clayton and Matt have talked maybe higher acres. Let's say there is 12 million. You know what? If you take the crop insurance and the price goes down, Matt, you were doing the math. It's fantastic.
It's a great deal. Yeah. I don't know if you guys saw in Bloomberg this week. I was up late one night and they said the hip thing for New York investors to do is not to buy flats in New York, but it's to buy corn farms. Did you guys see that?
No.
I saw that on Bloomberg. It was scrolling underneath on the bottom ticker thing. I was like, that's just crazy. I've never seen anything like that.
Clayton knows we have a lot of IBs around the country, and one of our IBs in north central Iowa had an unpleasant experience with a father that died about 6 months ago. And from the time they first started to market the farm, it's increased $1,000 an acre in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing. But if you look at a $800 an acre revenue stream and a cost of planting corn of $250, it makes sense that somebody's willing to pay $300 an acre in land rents, because he's still going to take $300 an acre home.
Right, that can all change pretty darn quickly. That's what bothers me. We've heard about a lot of these $300 rents. Several of them have popped up this year. iFarm, Chuck Farms. It scares me just a little bit. If we would switch this thing around even more than what you're thinking, and we do follow up with a good year, and you're right, we still have to grow it. I'm just saying, what if? What if we get back down under $3? Things can change pretty quick with those returns.
Can I address that for just a minute?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ethanol. You're going to take a third of your corn crop to make ethanol. I cap our ethanol production at about 14 billion gallons, and that is 10% of your road use of gasoline. Bush may be right, and they may do more than that, but I have a real hard time getting there. But that's a third of your corn crop. And what I see happening is that this is such a popular desire. It has nothing to do with profitability of ethanol. It has to do with energy security. You got a lot of people around the world that control crude oil supplies that don't like us. And you got a lot of people that control crude oil supplies that are very unstable governments. So security is a catchword, not profitability of green fuels.
And we have criticism of, there are people that are criticizing starting to look at this, but, we got to look at what we're subsidizing our oil prices by the war and all those other things we're doing. And if you really, the true cost of gasoline would be much higher than what we're paying. So I think we need to talk about that and make the public aware that, there is cost to doing this, but as you said, I think there's some real benefits. And not only that, there's a lot of community benefits. The people that are getting these ethanol plants in these communities are creating jobs. It's jobs that are here in this country, and there's other benefits just besides, you know, to the farmer in this.
Well, I guess that my point is that with this move to do this, and the fact that the energy market, what was the most popular thing you heard here at the beginning of the month, guys, that crude oil was going to go to $40 and maybe even $30? Well, here it is back up trading over 60. And I think that it's very difficult for us to take our crude oil prices down when you've got the United States trying to rebuild strategic reserves and maybe expanding those strategic reserves. We only pump we're using about 99% of our pumping capacity in crude oil every day anyway. And you add a 1 or 2% increase in demand, prices aren't going down. So I think that the chances of the ethanol plant having a margin that allows him to continue to buy corn right along is pretty good. And I sense that we take our feed demand down for corn. We may take exports down. But there's not going to be anybody in the U.S. government that mandates no exports in corn, that mandates no crush for ethanol. I've heard those ideas espoused this week. It just will not happen. And that kind of goes along with your same view about would we restrict people trading at the Board of Trade. I don't think so. You're not going to let them corner the market. But the idea of restricting somebody because corn prices get to be $4.50, it's just not going to happen.
So you don't. I have some concerns, though, that, you know, I'm old enough to remember Jimmy Carter embargo and Richard Nixon embargo.
Yeah.
I have a hard time believing, though, if we're putting all these money in the ethanol and biodiesel plants, that if it comes down to there's three components in this, the export market, the livestock market, and the ethanol, that if it comes down to if we have some kind of problem, that they're not going to say we're going to feed our own livestock industry or our own ethanol plants. I have a hard time not being concerned that they won't do something. You call it what you may, but
it's a little scary, but I think that price will ration. And when we look at these weather concerns this far in advance, and first of all, there is no tightness in corn today. We got plenty of corn. The market's paying you big carries to carry corn to June and July. If we run out of corn, it's going to be later this summer, not next month, and next year. So I guess that I feel like we're getting a little carried away and ahead of ourselves, and that's why I think that you have to have some new crop hedged, and I'm completely out of all old crop corn. I have no old crop corn left. I've kept some beans, but I'm very close to moving through my old crop beans on this rally. Fundamentals in beans don't support prices above this, and what I'll have to do if I'm going to be long something is come back and buy a call in corn to protect me, because that's the only place that I feel I can justify any length in the markets at this point.
It's pretty interesting. On Wednesday, I had guys coming in, and they wanted to know why the corn market was up so high. I said, it's a weather market. And they said, what, in South America? I said, no, here. They said, in February? I said, yes, in February. I said, that's all everyone's talking about on Wednesday, really, is wet spring, dry summer.
Yeah.
Here we are in a weather market in February already.
I'm afraid I was part of that last week, Clayton. I sent out a wire that had the analog years for the deterioration of the weather in the Pacific.
Right.
And it had all of the years that the NOAA put out. They put it out first time 2 weeks ago Friday.
Mm-hmm.
This was dated February the 8th. And the analog years are 1980, 1983, 1988, and 1995. This data didn't go back far enough, but there's also one 1974.
And 64 as well.
Yeah. So the problem here is that corn demand is so certain, and corn supply has to be up something close to meet it, that you get really nervous about it. So it's there for us to play with.
So what is your objective for Dease Corn?
Well, I think Dease Corn's enough. If we run out of corn, if we actually have a crop problem next year, get ready for July corn to trade a dollar over the Dease. Or a dollar and a half over the Dease.
Mm-hmm.
If corn goes to $5.50, July will be a dollar over December.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my answer. And I think that right now people are just almost bulletproof that corn's going to rally forever. And I'm not in that camp. I think that we've gotten way ahead of ourselves, and we could rally right into the March 31st report and then sell off sharply following that report. Government gives us 12 million acres and reduces bean acres by 8 or 9. Beans could be up 50 cents and corn down 50 cents in 2 days.
I've tried to tell my clients that if planters are rolling on April 1st and the March 31st intentions number was sky high, that we got doomsday for a little while in the corn market. You know, let's have some coverage in place. Weather at some point could take hold, but like you said, if we switch 12 and there's guys in Champaign County planting corn on April 1st, what's going to happen to the corn market, you know?
I think you have a tough time taking corn back below 350 for the next 2 years. That's my point of equanimity or whatever, you know, equilibrium. I guess if I get really bulled up, it has to be on a weather market. We're already starting to see some cut in demand. We've got the poultry placements that are down, broiler placements are down a couple percent each week, and you've got cattle that we're killing more than what we're placing. And I think the important thing here is that the consumer has to realize they're going to pay more for a steak or more for a pork loin or more for a chicken leg 6 months from now than they are today.
Maybe I'm a little bit odd again from Indiana. I've said it before, but, you know, I've got acres that I honestly are sitting there, and I'm going to wait for the report. And if beans take off and corn drops, they're going to be bean acres, and I'm going to go from there. I think there's other guys out there around the country that are sitting the same way. I know they've got the corn ordered, but, you know, and the seed guys probably don't like me saying this, but, you know, I just could plant beans, and I think there's other people out there going the same way as me.
Well, it depends on what you've done to the ground.
That's probably more likely, don't you think, in Indiana and Ohio than it is in parts
of
Illinois and Iowa.
Some people, though, in our area even, you know, talk about, hey, and they've got standing stalks. I've got guys that have said, hey, I might disc them up if the weather's right. If, you know, if the ground's drying up, I can disc and get away with it. I'm going to disc them up, and I'm going to plant corn, and I'm going to buy the full level of crop insurance, and I'm going to guarantee myself a heck of a lot more money than I've probably ever made on a crop of beans just by planting the corn crop. I've had several guys tell me that. I don't know if it's as much as over there, but that is being talked about some in my area and south. And I think if you get up here, yeah, you're right. That's probably not even going to happen. But, you know, if you have a guy that has stock standing and beans rally a dollar and he can just run a no-till drill through the field and that's all he does other than spray it, and like you said, you handle a third less volume or, you know, a third of the volume of corn as far as your harvest, I don't know.
And again, I think Roy's point there earlier, I mean, you got to look at certain states are committed, and obviously better corn growing states probably than beans, but you get in other states outside those two biggies there. The rest of us folks out there, I mean, I can grow 60 bushel beans. I don't use 50 as an average for my beans. So it changes the dynamics of what we're going to do. And you get into the far western states, obviously moisture can be a concern. So you know, beans aren't as you know, corn's not the biggie that it is in Iowa and Illinois. It's just a fact of the type of ground it is.
Can I switch venues for just a minute, guys?
Sure.
We're going into a spring weather situation, and we're looking at a big storm this weekend and another storm behind it next week. Wheat's going to come out of this looking pretty good. Your experience, wheat in your areas, do we have problems?
We do in our area, but we don't grow much wheat, probably not near as much as they do over around Chuck. But, the wheat looks punk in our area.
Well,
it looks bad.
Again, I'm used to the possibility of winter kill where the southern guys aren't. And the way the conditions are in the wheat, what I've told guys in my own wheat is, I don't know. But I do know, as Matt said, if it's ever going to get winter kill, this is the year because the way it looks.
Okay.
I don't know.
I've never seen a guy plow up or disc under a good-looking wheat crop. Mm-hmm. A bad one, yes, but a good one, no.
And I think it looks very, very bad. It's totally brown, and it's not looked that way for a long time.
Yeah.
Right.
But I don't know whether it's dead or not.
Roy, what number are you using for 2007 ethanol demand?
I have a, let me get my S&Ds back up in front of me here. I've got a growth that's pretty progressive, and I went back last week and I changed it for a meeting because of the numbers that the RFA put out. And I'm willing to adjust it again if need be, but at this point I'm using a 6.6 billion gallon production for this year, which is quite a bit bigger than USDA, about 160 million bushels of corn bigger at 2310. And then for next year, I'm using 3320 for corn and a 9.8 production. And the year after that, 0809, I'm using 3750.
And USDA for next year is at 3.1, right?
They haven't put anything out yet.
No, not yet. 3.3, I mean, seems like somewhere near is what people are talking about.
Yeah, I'm going to be in the Outlook meeting next week. There was supposed to be a USDA report on ethanol that came out on February the 22nd.
No,
came and passed, and they didn't put it out. And the census numbers yesterday showed insufficient data. So they're obviously having a hard time getting their arms around the information to put that report together.
Okay.
Well, let's wrap her up. We appreciate everybody being with us.
Guys, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks
a lot. Thanks a lot, Roy.